Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. My name is Matt Cavallo. I'm here with Allison Kugel, the author of Journaling Fame, a memoir of a life unhinged and on the record. Allison, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. It's such an inspiring book. Before we get into the book, you've had such a great career. Could you tell our audience a little bit about your background?
Sure. I spent about a decade as a celebrity profiler. So I was a journalist, but I had a very specific niche. I did in-depth interviews with various newsmakers from entertainment, health, politics, sports, publishing, music, all of that good stuff. And I did very conversational, lengthy, you know, feature interview profiles that were syndicated around the world. And it was kind of this labor of love and something that was just a great time in my life. And then I went on to write about it in the book.
So, and just looking at the list of people you've interviewed over time is quite an extensive list. Is there any one interview that stands out as your favorite?
I would say that my favorite interviews were the ones that really helped me along in my own journey. So the ones that I always talk about are Kristen Chenoweth, just because she was such a sweet, kind, you know, generous soul. And, you know, she was just very forthcoming with everything that had been going on in her life at the time. And Deepak Chopra, because I had been studying a lot of spiritual subject matter, and I really learned a lot from speaking with him. I would say Juliana Rancic. I've interviewed her twice, and both times we just got along like great friends, and she was very, very easy to talk to. Well, Nancy Sinatra was very important to me because I'm just such a huge fan of her father, Frank Sinatra. I mean, there's so many that I can't pick just one.
Well, you've had such an exciting group of people that you've talked to, you know, through the spectrum, whether it's healthcare or entertainment. And so when you were starting to think about writing a book, did any of these experiences shape or inspire you to write this book?
I would always tell anybody who I spoke to about my career or about my life, I would say, you know, I do these interviews for a living, and one day I'm going to write a book about all of them. And it was just something, you know, I've always kind of, before The Secret, before all of that stuff, I was always like speaking things into existence. I would just say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that, you know? So I was constantly saying, well, you know, like it was just a foregone conclusion. One day I'm going to write a book about all of these interviews. But I knew that I couldn't just put, you know, I'd spoken to a lot of, you know, experts in the publishing industry. I had a conversation with Judith Regan, who's a very big publisher. I had a conversation with a few different people, and I said to them, you know, here's my idea. What do you think? And a lot of what I heard was, well, nobody's going to pay for a book that just has a bunch of celebrity interviews in it because there's so much content online for free. You've really got to bring something else to the picture. And, you know, maybe talking about your experiences interviewing these people or your experiences setting up these interviews, you know, putting these interviews out, what you were going through in your life. And at first, you know, when you have an idea and you hear constructive criticism, you know, that your first reaction is to kind of shut down or get frustrated. But then I marinated on it. And I think that was the best possible thing that could have happened because, you know, I do weave some of the dialogue from the actual interviews throughout the book. But more importantly, the majority of the book is talking about what was going on in my life while I was doing these interviews. What was going on behind the scenes in setting them up and putting the interviews together and what it was like interacting with the person when we weren't, you know, on the record, so to speak. And I think that it made the book so much richer, a much better read.
Something happened in 2012. Did that shape how the book ended up being written?
Yes, it did, because you know, I have lived with anxiety and panic disorder my entire life. I don't even think I have more than maybe a couple of memories of my life not having it. I would say as far back as 8 or 9, I had been dealing with anxiety issues. And then, you know, anybody who has ongoing anxiety issues will tell you that it comes with a lot. You know, it's you know, you've got anxiety and you've got panic attacks and you've got some OCD and you've got a little depression, and they kind of all, it's sort of like a mixed bag, you know? So I had been dealing with a lot of that throughout my whole life, but my philosophy on it throughout most of my life was, how can I keep this a secret? How can I keep this hidden so that I'm not embarrassed? And so I never in a million years in the past would have ever said, oh, I'm going to speak about this, I'm going to write about this, and I'm going to tell the whole world that I have this. It was always just the opposite. But in 2012, I experienced such horrific anxiety that my mind and my body just completely, I don't know what you call it. You know, I don't know what the clinical definition of a nervous breakdown is. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I have to imagine that this was pretty close, because my mind and my body were so strung out with anxiety and panic that I was rendered just non-functional. And I was in and out of the emergency room because I kept thinking that I would perhaps, I didn't know if I had some horrific disease, if I was dying. I didn't know what was going on. I had dropped a ton of weight and I didn't think I was ever going to get better. I didn't know what had happened to me. And I remember praying one of the times in the hospital. I prayed to God. I said, if you get me out of this, if you get me better, I promise I will share my story and help other people.
And so what was it that led to that hospitalization? Was it the fear, the anxiety, the depression, or were there some physical symptoms like chest pains, or what was going on with you physically at that time?
Physically, it was a lot. I mean, I don't think, see, the thing about anxiety is it's not the anxiety. It's not the horrible worrying that sends somebody to the emergency room. It's the fear that it's that voice in the back of your mind that says, this is not really anxiety. This time is the real deal. This time you're really dying, or this time you're really having a heart attack, or you're really, this is the time that you're, you know, there's some horrific situation going on. And that's the thought process that sends you to the emergency room. So, like I said, I had dropped about 10 pounds and I wasn't trying to lose weight. You know, right now I'd love to lose 10 pounds, but I wasn't trying to lose weight at the time. So, and you know, I'm a very petite person. So on me, those 10 pounds, I mean, I just looked sickly. I was getting, I don't even know how to explain this. I was getting these episodes where I was freezing and hot at the same time. I would be shivering and shaking and sweating at the same time. I would get these headaches. I would get chest pains. I could barely, you know, keep down food half the time. I was running a low-grade fever. I was getting horrific night sweats. I mean, I could go on and on. I was having weird stomach issues. And I just thought, you know, my body is just completely giving out. Either I have some horrific disease or I don't know what's going on. And so I kept running to the emergency room. I kept calling ambulances to take me to the emergency room, and I had, you know, test after test after test. And there was one particular time at 3 a.m. where I was laying on that hospital cot and I was shaking and convulsing. I mean, I was like my muscles were twitching and shaking. And that was the first time I ever got introduced to any kind of tranquilizer, because they had to shoot me up with an elephant's dose of benzodiazepine to just get me to settle down a bit.
You must have been so scared.
I was scared out of my mind because, first of all, anybody who knows me knows, and I always laugh about this, that part of my anxiety is I'm kind of fearful of drugs and medication that I'm not familiar with. You know, I don't even like to take an aspirin or an Advil. I'm just, I don't like drugs. I don't like putting anything in my body that I'm not familiar with. But in that moment, I just gave in. You know, I gave in. I looked at that nurse and I watched them shooting that into my arm. And I said, you know what, anything's got to be better than what's going on right now. And I just went with it in that moment.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And at the time you had a young son. How was that on the entire family watching you go through this?
It was not an easy thing, because my son at the time was about 3 and a half. I tried as best as I could to hide, you know, luckily he was so young, he didn't know what was going on. I tried as best as I could to hide it from him. Anytime he was in front of me, I tried to put on a smile and act like everything was normal. I can recall certain points when he was fast asleep and I would sit and watch him and just think, God, he deserves so much better than a mother that's going through this. You know, because I was just kind of inclined to beat myself up at the time. You know, as I said, I just tried my best to conceal it. And, you know, my parents and my husband at the time, now my ex-husband, they had tried to kind of rally around and distract him and take care of him. And I remember one day my father actually said to me, you know, I really think that you should check into an inpatient program, like a rehab. And I called up around, I was in New York at the time, I was calling up around the city, and nobody had an open bed for me. So had they had an open bed for me, I probably would have checked into a rehab, but nobody had an available bed. So I just, but eventually I found a very good psychologist, a very good psychiatrist, and we were able to put the pieces back together.
And during this time, you're out there conducting these interviews, a high exposure job. How were you able to kind of work through all this anxiety and all these things that are swirling around in your mind? How are you able to compose yourself to get through the day and complete all these interviews?
Well, a couple of things. I think it's very odd, but for me, the interviews were almost like a vacation from my problems. Because for some reason, when I'm in that zone, I'm fine. I know it's hard to explain or imagine, but when I'm in that zone, I'm fine. And so I was, you know, when it was go time, and I was fine, and I could do the interviews, and then the interview would be done, and then I'd be back to being a basket case, and it was just the oddest thing. Although there was one interview that I did around that time with a particular actor named Joe Pantoliano. He was on The Sopranos. He played Ralphie on The Sopranos. He's been in a lot of movies. And with him, I was actually able to unburden myself and tell him. I said, you know, we were in the middle of doing the interview, and I said, and I was only able to do this because I knew that he had mental health issues. And so I said, you know, I got to be honest with you. I'm doing this interview, but I'm having just the worst anxiety and panic, you know, and panic attack issues these last few weeks. And I'm just not doing well right now. And so, he and I spoke about it. And that was my first inkling that opening up and talking could be a relief and could actually be part of the answer to get myself better.
Did you fear that there would be any kind of backlash from sharing your story?
No, not at all. I just felt putting this book out made me feel very courageous and very brave and fearless. And I haven't even given it a second thought. There hasn't even been a thought in my mind of, will somebody not want to work with me? Will somebody think I'm weird or crazy? Or, I mean, who knows? It's not even a thought in my mind, to be honest with you.
No, that's great. And you are so brave. We're with Allison Kugel, the author of Journaling Fame, a memoir of a life unhinged and on the record. As you start to share your story and start to talk about how anxiety and stuff drives you in life, did the whole content of the book change, or what could readers expect if they pick up this book?
Well, the interesting thing about this book is that I call it a self-help book, you know, in pop culture wrapping paper, because the thing that I like about my book is that, you know, so many people are into celebrities and pop culture and gossip, and, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, who doesn't like that stuff? What I like about my book is that so many people, you know, first of all, let me back up for a second. 40 million Americans currently suffer with some form of anxiety, okay? And not all are seeking the proper treatment. Not all are even aware of maybe what they're going through or what it is or how to help themselves. Not everybody's inclined to go for therapy. Not everybody is inclined to pick up a self-help book or a book written, you know, maybe by a clinical psychologist or a social worker or something like that. But there are so many people out there that would maybe take a look at, you know, my book and look at the description and the back cover and see that it's about all of these celebrity interviews and behind-the-scenes entertainment stuff. And they might pick it up and they may inadvertently wind up seeing themselves in my story about, you know, my experience with anxiety and panic disorder. And it could offer them a light at the end of the tunnel, or some comfort, some hope, some relatability. And I think especially with young people, especially, you know, millennials, I really, you know, there are so many young people in high school and college, or even, you know, post-grad in their 20s that are going through this. And they might be interested, you know, they might reach for my book because of all of the celebrity stuff. But I'm hoping that in that, you know, they'll find something that's very meaningful and helpful for them.
And speaking of meaningful and helpful, what was that for you? When you say it was a life unhinged, where did you find that motivation or desire to go get activated and change the way that you approached your own anxiety?
Ever since what I went through about 5 years ago, I said to myself, I will never be back in this place again. I will never allow my health, mental, you know, or otherwise, to ever, ever deteriorate to that point again. So now I'm very vigilant about my tools that I have. You know, whether it's, you know, going back to talk therapy, whether it's paying attention, you know, do I need to adjust my medication, or, okay, it's time to start listening to my meditation tapes again. It's time to start practicing my diaphragmatic deep breathing again. It's time to start journaling again. I also took up horseback riding, funnily enough. And, you know, when I turned 40 years old, which was a couple of years after that happened, I said, you know, I'm 40 years old. I've spent the first 40 years dealing with this anxiety BS, and kind of living in a state of fear, not wanting to relinquish control, not wanting to do anything that could be, you know, perceived as risky, or would kind of put me in a situation where I feel like I don't have control over my body or my safety. I said, I kind of want to try something different the second half of my life. So, you know, horseback riding became this amazing refuge for me, because not only did it symbolize so much, you know, getting back in the saddle, getting back on the horse, all of those, you know, all of those expressions, you know, it was the very manifestation of that. But it was also learning to relinquish some control, because you're sitting on top of this 1,200-pound animal, and you have to have this unspoken communication and be in sync with this animal and communicate with them, and you have to give up some control. And it also, being around horses, I find it to be very soothing and calming and meditative. And then learning to boogie board in the ocean with my son. These are things I never would have done before, because, oh my God, they're risky. You know, you're not in complete control. But for me, giving up some of that control has helped to heal me so much that, you know, I can't even tell you. So I think it's having the tools and having the confidence in knowing that you have your tools, and if you feel yourself sliding, or you feel like you're unbalanced, or you feel like things are really going downhill again, instead of just, you know, spiraling, you have to be vigilant about using those tools to get yourself back on course and correct course.
That is so great. And just looking at your bio, I understand that when you were younger, you suffered from some of these OCD type of things, like you needed to touch the walls as you walked by to feel safe. Did, you know, getting on the horse, or, you know, getting in the ocean, were you able to kind of reverse some of those things, or do you still have those behaviors today?
I still have, like, the leftover remnants of it. It's not anything like to the point where it interferes with my life, or that it's, you know, but I still have little tendencies, like, you know, at night I have a routine where I check to make sure the stove is off, and then I check the back door, and then I check the front door, and then I check the garage door, and then I turn on the alarm. But the thing is, I don't just do it once. Sometimes I'll have to kind of go back and do it again, and I have to say to myself, stop. You know that you locked it, you know that you checked it, just stop. You know, and I do have to kind of do that sometimes, but that's pretty much it. Other than that, and people laugh at me because when I get out of my car and I use the, like, you know, the remote to lock it, and you hear that little chirp, even though doing it one time locks it, I always do it twice. Chirp, chirp. So people always know, like, if I'm going to somebody's house to visit and they hear the two chirps outside, they know I'm there, because, but But I mean, other than those little things, I'm basically fine.
That is great.
And you have an association with this book, right? You work with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Is that correct?
Well, no, I don't work with them, but I contacted them a short while ago, and I said, look, you know, I wrote this book and I really think you should share it with your members. And they said to me, well, our members are really mainly, you know, clinicians, psychologists, social workers, psychiatrists. We don't really have, you know, civilian members. And I said, you know, we really only share books by, you know, by our members who are essentially doctors and social workers. And I said, well, that's great. And and those are valuable. But I said, the thing that's really important for you guys to know, since this is your organization, is that all of the millions of people out there who are like me, it's great to read a book written by a psychologist or by a social worker, but I can't even begin to express to you the value of reading a book by someone, just a regular person like me, not a doctor, who has experienced this and who shares what it feels like and what I went through in such intricate detail, that people will benefit in the fact that it's a morale boost. It's a feeling of, oh, it's not just me. You know, somebody else understands what this feels like, because there's a big isolation and embarrassment component to this. So when I explained this to her, she took pause and she said, you know what? She said, I usually don't do this, but I'd like for you to write an article for our website. And in the article, we'll promote your book. So I wrote that little essay, and she said that she would link to my book and everything, and she put that on there.
So this is amazing in two different ways, because one, you're helping people. Somebody's listening to this right now, feeling the same way you are, doing the same things you do. And maybe they're afraid to leave the house. Maybe this is going to give them that courage to go out there and, you know, take control of their life, just like you did. On the flip side, it is so important to reach out to the organizations like this and to the doctors to let them know the patient experience.
Mm-hmm.
I really think you're benefiting both sets there, both the patients who are going through this and the doctors that treat patients like you every day. So we couldn't thank you enough for being so brave to share this story with all of us.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And so as we're getting close to the close here, is there any final thoughts that you would like to leave our audience with?
Sure. I think it's very important for people to know where I've been and where I've gotten to, because if it helps at all, you know, I can say that, you know, at the lowest point in my life about 5 years ago, I was afraid to get into the shower by myself for fear that I don't even know what, you know, it's so irrational that, you look back and you say, well, what on earth was that about? But I was afraid to get in the shower by myself. I was afraid I would, I don't know, have some kind of medical emergency or somebody wouldn't be able to rescue me. I was afraid to walk from the front door of my house to the nearest stop sign, which is just, you know, right on my block. I remember at one point it was a huge deal for me just to get in my car and drive to the local pharmacy, which was just a mile away, because I had no choice. I had to go pick something up, and I was shaking the whole time. That's how agoraphobic I was at that particular point. And to go from that to, you know, putting this book out, speaking all over the place, horseback riding, you know, boogie boarding, doing all of this stuff, driving. I just took a drive, you know, up and down the East Coast. You know, it just goes to show that, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that where you are now is just temporary. That's so important. I can't stress that enough.
That message is so important. Allison, how can my listeners find you on the internet here?
The best thing would be to either go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and type in Journaling Fame, and my book will come up, which I think would be very helpful to anybody who's going through, you know, anything similar to what I've been through. Other than that, I would say my home base online is my Instagram page, which is at the Allison Kugel. And that's probably the best way to connect with me.
And we will make sure we share those links on our page
She's Alison Kugel, the author of Journaling Fame, a memoir of a life unhinged and on the record. Alison, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, we really appreciate it, and I just know that this is going to help a lot of people that are going through fear, depression, anxiety, and everything that you experienced. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm Matt Cavallo. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to tune in to another inspirational story soon.